Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This morning we're going to talk about another sad thing happening in our world. It actually is about everything, almost everything that we talk about on this show. It's about hurting each other. It's about people harboring vengeance and the attitude that if somebody does something wrong to you, instead of working it out, for some reason, the answer is kill them. I'm like floored by this attitude, and yet I see it everywhere I look. I don't care whether I'm looking at middle school or politics or neighborhoods. This morning on the news, there was a barrage of, besides the fact that this man who now they're saying was upset with the military, he killed 12 people and he injured 8 more. And, of course, he was in a shootout with the Washington police. So he's gone, too. So for whatever reason, for whatever slight that he feels was done to him or whatever wrong or whatever it was, we're going to read about it, we're going to talk about it, and see if we can understand why we have this this kind of rolling forward, I'm going to end everything for everybody attitude. Whatever happened to figuring out what went wrong or what the problem is or if we can work it out? It seems to be black or white. And after all my years on this world, I know that nothing, including people, are just black or just white. So we're going to bring in Shelley so she can hear all of this and comment when she has something to say. Good morning, Miss Shelley.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
That's good.
Glad that I remembered to call in this morning.
I am too. It doesn't seem like somebody who talks as much as I am would ever run out of things to say in an hour, but I do. And then I start sounding repetitious to myself, and that bugs me. I don't like to do that, and I'm sure that I do. So it's much nicer when we can have some banter and some discussions about some of the things we talk about.
Right.
This is a horrible thing that has taken place in the state of Washington, and there's lots of news about it this morning, and there's lots of conjecture because they still haven't really decided what took place or why it took place. Although the most recent thing says that he was upset and that he's had previous brushes with the law. I mean, you know, that could mean anything, right? That could mean he's gotten speeding tickets. So we're going to research a little bit, and I'm going to bring up the latest, albeit I don't know whether it's the greatest, but certainly the latest. It was posted 13 minutes ago. So we're going to catch up that way, and while we're talking, I will keep on seeing if new things come up while we're talking. But it is kind of right now it's kind of convoluted, to be honest with you. So the Mayor Vincent Gray has been up and done a little bit of a talk to everybody. This is very brief, but I'm gonna bring it up. It says, so much was misreported in the first few hours after the shooting rampage at Washington's Navy Yard. The erroneous reports weren't concocted. In most cases, they came directly from police sources and quickly bubbled up through the modern media ecosystem, hopping from law enforcement scanners to Twitter to traditional media reports all within minutes. Reporters are no better than their sources, and as sources, police scanners aren't very reliable. Our main motto is first get it right, then get it fast. We'd rather be slow but accurate. The public doesn't remember who got what first. It does remember who got something wrong. I thought that that was pretty good.
Yes.
You know, that whole they also have decided that at the latest accounting that 13 are dead, and one of them is one of them was the perpetrator, Aaron Alexis. But there was also Michael Arnold, who was 59, Sylvia Frazier, who was 53, Kathleen Gard, who was 62, John Roger Johnson, who was 73, Frank Kohler, who was 50, Kenneth Proctor, who was 46, and Vishnu Pandit, who was 61. And the eighth person was Arthur Daniels, who was 51. So all of these people worked in the Navy Yard. Now, here's kind of a synopsis of this young man, and I've seen his pictures several different times, and of course, pictures, you know, you could, that old saying of pictures speak a thousand words, and each picture speaks a different set of a thousand words. So, he moved to Fort Worth to the district about a month ago, had an arrest record in three states. And those who knew Alexis in recent years describe him as a sweet and intelligent guy, a regular customer at the Thai restaurant where he had been a waiter, and a good boy, his landlord said, but also as very aggressive, someone who seemed as though he might one day kill himself, a lay worker at the Buddhist temple where Alexis worshipped. He's a 13-year-old stuck in a 34-year-old body, said somebody by the name of owner of the Happy Bowl Thai restaurant in White Settlement, Texas, and a friend who lived with Alexis for most of the past 3 years. He needs attention. So, and then, you know, it has lots of conversation about the people that lost their lives yesterday, and I don't think we need to know about each one of them. Although I want to be respectful, and say that we are sure that they all have stories, and we are sure that they were good, honest, go to work every day people, and that's what they were doing yesterday. Most of them were there because they worked there, but it's kind of scary when you think that he had a way to get in without even being noticed. And this, of course, points to our inability, for what it's worth, to stay on top of things like admittance to different places. I was at Palms West Hospital yesterday, and I just want to share this because it's just so indicative of what we see everywhere. My daughter-in-law was in the hospital yesterday morning. Well, she's still there. She comes home today for a surgery. And my son was in there with her, and I had my grandson and myself, and we kept calling, and they kept changing the room. My daughter-in-law wasn't out of intensive care yet or post-surgery room. Usually that's intensive care. And they were waiting for a room. So we go in downstairs. Now, all hospitals, if you haven't been lately, take your driver's license or your form of ID, take a picture of you, give a sticker saying what room you're going to go to with a picture of you on it. a very unflattering picture, I might add. And we couldn't figure out what room she was in. My son kept telling us she was in a certain room because that's what they kept telling him upstairs, that she was going to go to such and such a room. And when the young man downstairs looked it up on the computer, which is right in front of him, he couldn't find my daughter-in-law. So then he called back and said, she's not back there anymore. So she must be in a room. So he put in a room number on our badges and sent us upstairs. We get on the elevator. We get off on the second floor. We look. One side is pediatrics. The other side is just other patient rooms. So I see the numbers, and I'm looking at the sign, and a guard comes up and says, are you lost? And I said, yes, we're looking for this room. And he said, that's not what your badge says. And I said, it doesn't. And I looked at my badge, and it said a whole different number than what we had talked about downstairs. So I said, well, there was some confusion, and he told us to just come up and look. So he said, well, I think the room you're looking for is on this side. So he starts walking us towards this door, and you're supposed to have a special card to get into the pediatric floor. I said, my daughter-in-law's a little old to be on the pediatric floor. I'm pretty sure she's not here. Well, he just kept walking, and when he said to me, you're supposed to have special cards to get in here. I said, that's because she wouldn't be on the pediatric floor. We're not here to see a baby. Well, he uses his badge and lets us into the pediatric floor. And we're walking around looking lost with him. Can't find the room number that we're looking for. And another lady says, what room are you looking for? So in the meantime, my grandson calls his dad on the cell phone, and he says, I'm in room 262. So we said, okay. So I said, 262 should be across the hall. The lady standing with us says, we don't have 262 anymore. I said, okay. So I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God, am I in the land of Oz or what? What the hell's going on here? So I just walk away from the lady and the guard. In the area that is supposed to be very, very strictly governed. Now, I hope nobody missed that. You're supposed to have a special card to get on the pediatric floor. And these two people have just let me and Mike in like they're old friends of ours and know us, right? So we turn around, we walk down the other way. The guard gets way in front of me and says, I don't think there is a 262. And the first room on the left in that hallway is room 262. And I said, excuse me, here's the room, and my son is in there. So we walk in, and here sits Mike. They haven't brought my daughter-in-law yet. I said, honey, how long have you been sitting here? About 45 minutes. They told me this is the room she's going to come to. A nurse came in and said she's on her way. They didn't have any rooms. Well, in the meantime, I look across the hall. Every room across the hall is empty, and there's empty beds in them. So I'm like, good God. So finally, they bring Valerie into a room that nobody knows is there to an empty bed that they have to pull out because she's on a bed. And I'm like, so then I come home and I read all this stuff and I'm like, I can understand how that can happen. Nobody pays attention. First of all, the young man in uniform downstairs should have never let us go up there with a fictitious room on it. I would have been angry if they'd have kept screwing around with us. Don't get me wrong. But I still would have understood the safety. And then to just walk us onto the pediatric floor when we don't even belong there. And then the one lady says, well, if you just hit the door, sometimes it opens. And I'm like, good God.
Oh, my God. Why would you say something like that?
Well, I mean, doesn't it just prove to you what happened in Washington?
Well, but I see this. It's not just in these type of jobs. I see this at every job I work at. And I had a conversation with somebody recently, and I said, one of the problems is a lot of a lot of companies, a lot of organizations, and this is even big business, where you're talking hospitals and government installations, start out small. At some point, they started out small. So you started out with a 10, 20, or 30-man operation. As the operation grows, they don't change their policies and rules and regulations in accordance with the size of the new operation. I've seen this happen so many times. So what happens is when you take a company that was a 20-man operation and now you're a 50-man operation, the same organizational procedures don't apply anymore. It's different when you have that many more people in the mix. And then if you go from 50 to 150, it's a totally new ballgame, and so on and so forth. And what I've seen happen is when you had one person that was handling a job and they were doing everything that job entailed, and now they get two assistants, and they're going to pass that job off to these two other people because they're going on to do something else now because the company is expanding, invariably they don't understand how many steps it took them to do what they did. So when they train the next two people, they think they're telling them exactly how they did their job, but they're leaving steps out. So now when these two new people take over what they used to do, they're not doing the same job. So things start falling through the cracks. And then this just perpetuates as you go further. So people aren't being trained thoroughly. They're not being trained in all the steps that it takes to do a particular job. And in addition to that, I don't understand why this is so prevalent today, because it wasn't like this when I was younger. People do not interject common sense. I'm sorry, there is something called common sense that you don't need book knowledge for. It's just an innate sense of what's right or wrong. And when you're in a situation like that guard, whether he was trained or not, if he knew that you were supposed to have a special card to get in that area, common sense should have kicked in, and he should not have walked you in there without finding out where you were supposed to be. All right? Mm-hmm. He was not a customer liaison. He was not a what do you call it, people at a restaurant when you walk in. I'm drawing a blank on the word. But anyway, a hostess, He wasn't seating you at a restaurant. You were led into a secure area. I mean, what was he thinking? That certainly is not part of his job. And although he was trying to be helpful, he was being helpful in a with lack of common sense, irresponsibly, not taking into consideration what his job was all about. If he's a security guard, his job is about security, not helping people find their room. So what he should have done is led you to somebody that it is their responsibility to help you find their room. That wasn't his responsibility. His responsibility was to keep the floor secure, and leading you in a place that you didn't have permission to go to was certainly 100% wrong. And then the nurse doing the same thing. And how do they not know that they have a room 262? The other thing I'm finding a lot, and again, I find it at the job that I just left, I found that at every job, people will shoot out comments as though they're fact without making sure that they're correct. And I'm the type of person, I question everything. And if I believe something should be true and somebody says something to me, I don't just accept it. I say, well, wait a minute. I found this and this and this out, so this other thing has to be true. And I'll persist, and sure enough, I get the other person to research a little more. Oh, you're right, and this kind of a thing. But most people aren't persistent like me. Most people doubt themselves. So if somebody tells them something that goes against a piece of information that they felt they had, they don't push it. And then they walk around, and then when they get called on the carpet later for not finishing a particular task, they'll say, well, so-and-so told me that I couldn't do it for this reason. And they're always blaming somebody else. And so all these different scenarios, whether you're talking regular corporate America, whether you're talking a hospital, whether you're talking military, these particular behaviors are now so prevalent in the workforce today, and I don't understand it, because it wasn't like that when I was growing up, when I was a teenager. So 40 years ago, there was a totally different work ethic out there, and it's really suffered in the last few decades.
Well, I think there's a couple different reasons. All of those are true, valid points, and I
just to throw this in the mix, a lot of times people are lackadaisical because they don't want to take responsibility because they don't really feel that it is their responsibility. They sit in a seat.
Well, that comes, let me interject. The reason that is goes back to what I said before. It's a lack of training. And I think the lack of training is more responsible for these attitudes because I believe personally that most people want to do a good job, and I think the only reason they don't is because they don't understand that they're supposed to do more than they're doing, so they feel like if they do more, that they're doing somebody else's job, that it was somebody else's responsibility, because they don't understand it's part of their task. And I think a lot of it has to do with insufficient or incomplete training.
Well, that's for sure. But the point is that if you're going to have a large business with several different levels of employees, everybody has specific responsibilities. The problem is that everybody needs to know what the other person is doing as well. One of the things that I've always found out is that it's important when you have miscommunication between employees is to say, now look at the reason Shelley couldn't do her job is because Rini didn't finish hers, because this is Rini's job, and then Shelley should have picked up the ball at this point in time, not way up here. If Rini had finished what she was supposed to do, then when Shelley picked up the ball, she would have been able to keep the ball in play. If everybody doesn't understand what the other person is doing and they think, oh, well, you know, I'm thinking, what's the big deal? There's only a couple steps left to this procedure. Shelley knows what she's doing. She can pick it up. That's what starts the pattern of inability to finish one endeavor. So yesterday with these people, I'm suspecting that we're going to find that out as well with this horrible thing that happened yesterday, is one person makes a decision to drop the ball. One person. And when the ball gets dropped, one person picks it up and runs with it, and then you have this. You have deadly consequences. So I do believe in training. You know, you and I talk about training all the time, as so far as training in the schools and with teachers and with adults in general, and everybody needs to understand a little bit more about what somebody else is thinking so that they can make better decisions. But this, in a secured military place, this is awful. This isn't just what it looks like at face value. This means no matter how we want to cut this particular pie, that nobody's safe. Just like me in the hospital yesterday. I was some sicko 65-year-old woman who wanted to take a baby.
I know. I was, you know, when you were telling that particular story, that's what I kept thinking of, because you do hear things like that happening in hospitals.
Well, I'm sure that's why it's a protected floor now, because of that. I'm sure that's why. I'm sure that any hospital
it's only a protected floor if the employees and the staff do what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's no different than any other floor.
Exactly. And doors are not locked into the nursery. Doors are not locked into the patient's rooms. What about the scenario you walk on the floor and you're not supposed to be there and you have a bad intention? And you walk down the hallway and here's a baby in in one of those cute little bassinets on wheels, and mom had to step into the bathroom.
That's right.
That baby's yours. And without anybody paying attention because it's not their job, quote unquote, then everything's gone. And again, that's what I think happened yesterday. It was a series of dropping the ball.
Right. Well, it's a combination of dropping the ball, not doing everything that your particular job function would call for, But the other part of it, and this doesn't really go to training. This just goes to people paying attention, like you were saying. He had to know that it was inappropriate to take you in a secure area if you didn't have that badge. So here he just went into this training for whatever reason. And then the nurse telling you that if you just pushed on the door, it would open anyway. I mean, if you know that piece of information, why would you ever share it with somebody that you don't know, that you don't know what their intentions are, that it's not a fellow staff member, it's not somebody you've been friends with for 10 years that you can trust. This is somebody you're just meeting in the hall who's looking for a room, and now you tell them that they can get into a secure area of the hospital just by pushing on a door. That's inappropriate. And I see people in jobs all the time blurting things out. It's like people lack impulse control. They think something that comes out their mouth. They don't analyze what they're about to say. Just bam, they just say it.
You and I have talked about many times, I used to get really angry at the Institute when I'd walk up behind somebody and I'd hear a guest complaining about another staff member. And I would hear the staff member that was being addressed say, "Oh, I know she does that all the time. Isn't that awful?"
Oh.
And I'm like, "What do you think? Why did you agree with that? Why didn't you say, oh, that doesn't sound like her at all? I'm going to have to, we'll go talk to her and see what's wrong. Something must be wrong because she would never do that." That's the appropriate answer.
Mm-hmm.
Not, she does that all the time. I know, I can't stand that either. What kind of crap is that? Just like yesterday, this woman, she was very sweet, and so was the guard. And they were trying to help us. They weren't bad people. They were good people. They were nice people, sweet people. But, unthinking people. People
right.
that weren't, I mean, I realize I do look pretty harmless. I'm an old woman. And, but, I mean, so did, there's this guy. You heard what I just read about what other people said about him. Child in a grown man's body and a sweet guy and a nice boy and all this kind of stuff, but he,
Well, killed. Any time that a baby has been taken from a hospital, it's because the individual looked harmless. They were calm. Once they took the baby, they didn't go running through the halls. They were very cool, calm, and collected. They didn't draw any attention on themselves, and they would literally get in an area they weren't supposed to be, collect the baby, and just roll out of the hospital like they were supposed to be there. Nobody questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
When you get people like that that are doing something wrong, a lot of times they know how to act to stay under the radar so they don't draw attention to themselves, So just because somebody's acting or looking okay, that's not an indication that they are. And there's been enough stuff that's happened to prove that. So the bottom line is, if your job is not to allow somebody in a particular area unless they have this badge, then guess what? You don't let them in. And you certainly don't tell them that they push on the door, they can get in at another time when they come back a week later.
Yeah.
It's just nonsense.
Yeah.
It really
is
just, and like you said, it might be sweet, but
yeah.
Zero common sense. I'm sorry.
Well, it is, but there could have been a way that it could be handled so that I'm not pissed because I can't get in, can't find my daughter-in-law, can't find my son, don't know who I'm supposed to ask. It happened to me at the other hospital I guess it's been about 6 weeks ago now with my husband. He's in this room. No, he's not in this room. Oh, no. And then everybody...
Oh, boy.
Set it up so that there's several people you have to go through now. So if one person makes a mistake, the other person is supposed to catch it, is my assumption, is why they do it like that. Because you go to a front desk, then you go to a security guard, then you get up on the floor and somebody asks you what you're doing on the floor. That arrests people totally ignoring you, and you can walk wherever you want to walk. You see both things. But... like yesterday, these people, like I said, the man at the front desk, the security guard up on the floor, and the lady were all trying to be sweet, and they were all trying to be nice to us, and I appreciate that. I do. But I also think to myself, you know, thank God I had good intentions. Because
that's
if
right.
I didn't, their whole life could have changed forever. I'm going to read this because this is a good story, and some of the words that are using as I'm perusing it are what we're talking about. An employee
okay.
at a defense contractor used his pass to get into the Washington Navy Yard and went on a deadly shooting rampage Monday, spraying bullets in the hallways and firing from a balcony on workers in an atrium below. 12 people were killed, plus the gunman. The motive for the attack, the deadliest mass shooting on a military installation in the United States since the tragedy at Fort Hood, Texas, in 2009, was a mystery, the investigators said. Mayor Vincent Gray said there is no indication it was a terrorist attack, but he added that the possibility had not been ruled out. The assault at the highly secure The assault at the highly secure Navy Yard unfolded at about 8:20 a.m. in the heart of the nation's capital, less than 4 miles from the White House and 2 miles from the Capitol. Again, an arena that should be incredibly secure, incredibly watched, unbelievably protected. However, the gunman, Aaron Alexis, a 34-year-old former Navy reservist whose last known address was in Fort Worth, Texas, died after a running gun battle inside the building with the police, investigators said. We are confronting yet another mass shooting, President Obama said Monday during remarks that were intended to address the financial crisis. And today it happened on a military installation in our nation's capital. A law enforcement official told CBS News, Pat Melton, the shooter was discovered with an AR-15 assault rifle and a shotgun with him and was wearing dark blue clothing. Melton reports that the shotgun was traced to a gun store in Lorton, Virginia. According to a federal law enforcement official, the official said the shotgun was purchased at the store within the last week. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports that Alexis was also found with a sidearm that authorities believe may have come from one of the Navy Yard's security officers. For much of the day, authorities said they were looking for a possible second attacker who may have been disguised in an olive drab military-style uniform. But by late Monday night, they said they were convinced the attack was the work of a lone gunman and the security lockdown around the area was eased. We do now feel comfortable that we have the single and sole person responsible for the loss of life inside the base today, Washington Police Chief Kathy Lanier said. Mr. Obama promised to make sure whoever carried out this cowardly act is held responsible. The FBI took charge of the investigation. The attack came 4 years after Army psychiatrist Major Nidal Hassan killed 13 people in Fort Hood in what he said was an effort to save the lives of Muslims overseas. He was convicted last month and sentenced to death. In addition to those killed, 8 people were hurt, 3 of them shot and wounded, according to the mayor. Those 3 were a police officer and 2 female civilians, authorities said. They are all expected to survive. A number of the victims were civilian employees and contractors rather than active duty military personnel, the police chief said. Late Monday, police released the names of seven of the 12 victims. I've already read those. At the time of the rampage, Alexis was an information technology employee with the Experts, a company that was a Defense Department subcontractor on a Marine computer project. Now, all that sounds kind of intricate to me, doesn't it, to you?
Wow, yeah, it does.
Doesn't it seem like if you're going to work for a technology company, called the experts, and it's a Defense Department subcontractor on a marine computer project. Doesn't it sound like a pretty extensive background check should have been done with you? And, I mean, you know, extensive.
Wasn't that the deal with Snowden? Wasn't he an information technology subcontractor also?
Who's that?
Snowden?
Yes. Yes.
What is it with these guys? I mean, really?
Yeah. I don't know.
Wow.
Valerie Parlev, head of the FBI's field office in Washington, said he had a legitimate access to the base as a defense contractor and used a valid pass. Alexis had been a full-time Navy reservist from 2007 to early 2011, leaving as a petty officer third class, the Navy said. It did not say why he left. He had been an aviation electrician's mate with a unit in Fort Worth. So he sounds like a smart guy. These are not jobs that people just hand out.
That's right.
Especially today, you know.
That's right.
A convert Buddhism who grew up in New York City, Alexis had run-ins with the law over shooting incidents in 2004 and 2010 in Fort Worth and Seattle and was portrayed in police reports as seething with anger. Okay. So that went all the way back to 2004, but with a background check, a young man who's been involved in shooting incidents and a police officer who was obviously paying attention to what he was doing wrote he was seething with anger, and yet this same young man got into a place like this. This is something that I just don't get. Witnesses
I don't either.
A gunman opening fire from a fourth floor overlook, aiming down on people on the main floor, which includes a glass walled cafeteria. Others said a gunman fired at them on a third floor hallway. Patricia Ward, a logistics management specialist, said she was in the cafeteria getting breakfast. It was three gunshots straight in a row, pop, pop, pop. 3 seconds later, it was pop, 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 pop. So it was like about a total of 7 gunshots. And we just started running. Okay, that looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 to me, but okay. The Washington Navy Yard is a sprawling 41-acre labyrinth of buildings and streets protected by armed guards and metal detectors, and employees have to show their IDs at doors and at gates. More than 18,000 people work there. This could have been one whole hell of a lot worse, that's for sure. Of course, the people that lost family members don't feel that way, but that's from the outside looking in. I don't want to take lightly the fact that people lost loved ones, but 18,000 people to lose 12 people, I guess if we have to count blessings, that would be one to count. The rampage took place on Building 197, the headquarters for Naval Sea Systems Command, which buys, builds, and maintains ships and submarines. About 3,000 people work at headquarters, many of them civilians. Todd Brundage, an executive assistant with Navy Sea Systems Command, said he and co-workers encountered a gunman in a long hallway on the third floor. The gunman was wearing all blue, he said. He just turned and started firing, Brundage said. Terry Durham, an executive assistant with the same agency, said the gunman fired toward her and Brundage. He aimed high and missed. He said nothing. As soon as I realized he was shooting, we just said, get out of the building. As emergency vehicles and law enforcement officers flooded streets around the complex, a helicopter hovered. Nearby schools were locked down and airplanes at nearby Reagan National Airport were grounded so they would not interfere with law enforcement choppers. Security was tightened at other federal buildings. Senate officials shut down their side of the Capitol while authorities searched for the potential second attacker. The house remained opened. In the confusion, police said around midday that they were searching for two men who may have taken part in the attack. one carrying a handgun and wearing a tan Navy-style uniform and a beret, the other armed with a long gun and wearing an olive-green uniform. Police said it was unclear if the men were members of the military. But as the day wore, police dropped one person and then the other as suspects. As tensions eased, Navy Yard employees were gradually released from the complex and children were let out of their lockdown schools. Administrator Jonathan Greenert, chief of Naval Operations, was at the base at the time the shooting began, but was moved unharmed to a nearby military installation. Anxious relatives and friends of those who worked at the complex waited to hear from loved ones. Tech Sergeant David Reyes, who works at Andrews Air Force Base, said he was waiting to pick up his wife, Dina, who was under lockdown in a building next to where the shooting happened. She sent him a text message. "They are under lockdown because they just don't know," Reyes said. "They have to check every building in there, and they have to check every room, and just, of course, a lot of rooms and a lot of buildings." So it sounds as though the handling of this after the fact was professional and timely, and, you know, everything was taken care of. But again, you know, there's a million... to come to my mind.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead, honey.
One of the things that I'm reacting to is the fact that they said that this is a highly secure building with metal detectors. So how did he get the rifle in there and the handgun? I'm struggling with that. When you go through security checks, you're supposed to either go through the metal detector and take everything out of your pocket. So how did he get in with weapons? They're not talking about that.
I don't know.
That almost sounds like he was in cahoots. I mean, think about that for a minute. How did he get the weapons? If he's coming in through a secure checkpoint and they said that he badged himself in, all right, a subcontractor is not going to have a weapons carrying permit. You know, he's not one of the security people. So, I mean, when pieces of information like that are left out, it tells me that there's more to the story. Because how did he get the weapons in there? Either he didn't go through a checkpoint and found a different way to get on the installation, or somebody on the inside that is permitted to be there had the weapons and gave them to him. But how do you get to the checkpoint with the weapons? I would like to see if that shows up in the news at any time as this unfolds and if anybody else picks up on that.
Well, here's my thought on that, and this is just to throw out there for the sake of argument, and that would be that just because there's a checkpoint and a place to scan your badge, because so many people do carry firearms, it wouldn't surprise me to find out that if you use something other than a main entrance and exit where people that are not badged to come in, that that's where the metal detectors are, and that in the areas where an employee, I mean, you know, like if you go to the hospital, at the hospital, you have main entrances, you have side doors, you have all kinds of exits and entrances for employees, like kitchen staff and housekeeping staff and maintenance men and people like that. And they just have to, usually slide a card, almost like a card lock in a hotel. And they just have their own personal card and get in through the door. I would imagine, and I could be wrong, but just for the sake of argument, like I said, that at those exits and entrances, there is no metal detector. And then there is a metal detector where they're afraid that somebody would be hiding a gun and trying to come through the front door because they're trying to gain access when they don't belong. But that's just, like I said, for sake of having another side of the story.
I'm kind of looking at this as like the courthouses. Anytime I've ever had to go to a courthouse, all the other entrances are locked down. They only have one main entrance, and whether you go left or right, they have metal detectors at both ends. It's like going to the airport. You got to surrender all your stuff. You got to put it in a basket. You got to take your shoes off. You get to get in the courthouse. You know, so how could a military installation have something less than that? There's something more to the story that we're not hearing. That's just my gut feeling.
Well, I mean, I think that's a given. I think that you're probably absolutely right. But the point I'm making is because they have these other exits and entrances, something could have been done the day before. He could have come in the day before and gotten in and out and in and out and parked a vehicle in the back. He could have done any number of things. That's why it's really not. If somebody really wants to do something, Shell, you don't stop them with a locked door. I think that's proven time and time again. You don't stop them with anything. And, it reminds me of something else, which is kind of a funny story. I'm at a courthouse over here in Pompano Beach. It's an annex courthouse, very small, nothing like being at Palm Beach Courthouse, or certainly nothing like being at the Broward County Courthouse in Fort Lauderdale.
Uh-huh.
And it has a thing where you empty your pockets and you go through the metal detector and they look at your purse. Or your attaché case or whatever it is you're carrying, you put it through that what do you call it?
Like a scanner type of thing.
Scanner thing. You put it through there. Well, I'm in there one day, and I cannot tell you, and I'm probably going to get myself in trouble for this, but I cannot tell you how many times I've gone through scanners with a purse. I have a pocket knife in my purse that says "The Boss," that was given to me by Jeff Huntley, God, 10 years ago, anyway. And could I hurt somebody with it? Yeah, I probably could, cut somebody with it, a little tiny cut. The blade is like maybe an inch and a half long. I keep it on my purse for like breaking strings and stuff like that when I'm, one of those kind of little. I've gone through every single courthouse, every single scanner with that on my purse for 10 years.
Wow.
The other day, I'm going into this courthouse, and this elderly lady is standing there, and here's a cop and her. He sees my purse. He looks at it. It keeps going. She goes, "Wait a minute." She pulls my purse out. She takes she says, "You can't go in there with this, my little knife." And it's open. Yeah, I mean, it's hanging on the outside of my purse. It's not concealed.
Right.
That's how, I just forget that it's even there,
Right,
so she
says,
"I've got to take that off and take it back out to the car." I said, "Okay, sorry. I forget that it's even on there." Okay. So then she puts my purse through again and finds fingernail clippers in the bottom of my purse and makes me take those out to the car. Now, the cop that was standing there was going to let my purse go through on the first time.
Right.
That's the truth. Had she not been standing there, I'd have gone in again with my fingernail clippers and my little pocket knife. Am I harmless? Yes. But, but that's a true story, and that has happened. And I was one day in Fort Lauderdale Courthouse, and this woman looks at me, and I'm filing my nails because I'm sitting outside waiting for somebody. Outside. She goes, "Oh, my God, how'd you get in with that file?" And I said, "I don't know. I didn't even think about it. It's always in my purse, So, I mean, that's just something that happens on a daily basis. It's the security is only good as the securers, if that's a word, the securers. And if they're not watching what they're doing, then it doesn't matter. So anything could have happened here. But it wouldn't surprise me if, like you just said, like a whole bunch of other stuff comes to light at the end of this investigation. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And I,
it would surprise me to hear that a subcontractor would have, I can see a handgun, because a lot of people have carry permits, but still when you go on a military installation, unless you're a security officer, I don't think people should be able to take handguns. I think that's the whole point of the freaking checkpoint. So I'm still, that's my issue. And it wasn't even a handgun. I mean, he had a handgun, but he also had a rifle. I mean, that's not a concealed weapon. How did they not see he had a rifle? So I'm just struggling with that part of the story.
Yeah. Well, and I think everybody is. And I would imagine that the people who, you know, be held a little bit responsible would like to know what the hell happened as well. I mean, it is what it is.
But none of the news media is even commenting on that. That's why I'm saying. I don't know if anybody else is even, they're either noticing that and not commenting deliberately, or they're just simply not noticing that. So I don't know which way it's going, but like none of the media sources seem to be even flagging that as an issue at this point. So I'll be curious to see if it does end up in the news.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think eventually. Well, it all depends on what happens today, honey. It all depends on if something else that's more horrific happens today as to whether or not this will keep on being on the front page. You know how
or
that
works. Or if
Miley
Cyrus makes another video, right?
Exactly. That's exactly the truth. As sad as it sounds, that is exactly the truth. And I think at the end of the day, that's always what it's about. It's about, you know, what sells the most newspapers and what sells the most television channels, all of the above. And, of course, it is survival of the fittest out there. We know that for sure. But I do believe that at the end of the day, there's going to have to be some questioning as to how he got the guns in. And I imagine they'll have a pretty neat and tidy explanation for how it happened, because that's their job, to figure out how it did happen, and they'll have to explain it to keep everybody happy. But again, that's what I'm saying. It only works if everybody's really working it, and they may have things in place, but who knows what's going to happen with that. I mean, look at some of the movies we watch. Some of your heroes that can go into these giant, I can't think of the names of any of the movies now, but I'm envisioning when they walk in, the Born Identity, what's the name of that? Is that the right name? The Born Identity.
Right.
I mean, there's a perfect scenario. Big Spike watches that movie every time it's on television, and we have the movie here, and he'll watch it over and over again. And I watch all this stuff, and I think to myself, you know, first of all, that's one of the reasons why people come up with some of the ideas they do, is because the innovativeness of the people who create some of these movies, because it shows them different techniques and ways to get away with murder. And I'm pretty sure that in some cases that's exactly how plans were derived, because somebody watched a movie and got the ideas from that, maybe critiqued it a little bit, but made it work for them. It wouldn't surprise me a bit.
What about the show Burn Notice?
Yeah.
Remember, you guys used to watch that with that guy, that CIA agent. I mean, the character Michael could get in anywhere, the most secure facility, and he knew how to get in there. And in the background, while you're watching the scene, he'd be narrating what he's doing. Do you remember that show? I mean, I liked the show for that reason, because he always explained what he was doing. But he would tell you, you know, oh, well, when you go into a secure area like this, there's this type of a guard, so this is how you get around. And here he's in the background narrating what he's doing, and then you're watching him do it, and you see the scene play out. But he could get in the most secure facility, and he'd always act like he knew somebody and like he was supposed to be there, and half the time, you know, oh, I left my badge in my car, and it's like, you know, Fred upstairs, he's waiting for me, just let me up there. And the people, oh, okay, you know, that kind of a thing. But he always acted like he was supposed to be where he was, you know. And it's when people don't follow the rules and say, no, Michael, you got to go and you got to get your badge, I'm really sorry. But he would talk to them in a way that he would almost convince them that they were not doing the right thing if they didn't let him go up. Meanwhile, he had no business being there. You know, so that show is a real example, because he got into all kinds of installations, both commercial and military.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have somebody that's got a tag here. I hope this isn't somebody who's going to do something immature and rude, but I'm going to invite them in, but it's nobody that
somebody
I recognize. Good morning.
This is Earl. Do you want to suck my dick? Or lick my asshole? Please.
Mute.
Yeah, another one of those nice things. I guess people, I guess I'm...
It might be the same person. I think it is the same person over and over again, because he says the same thing every time. So.
Yeah, yeah. So,
this is what we've talked about on the show before, with somebody having, like, a mental disorder, because that's a mental disorder when somebody does that. It's a form of exhibitionism, things like that. So if this guy's still listening, I hope you get some help.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, because that's not a normal thing to do. That's a mental disorder if somebody feels the need to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's a shame, too, because, it so sends such a horrible message out there about who we are. I don't mean you and I. I don't mean the radio show. I mean us as a people, just like what this young man did yesterday. I suspect we're going to find out that he suffered from some kind of mental illness and has let something fester and grow in his head, and he probably feels, as though yesterday was something he had to do. And that's what's sad about it. You can convince yourself that every bad thing or everything you've ever done in your life that you're ashamed of, you did for a reason. We have that ability to convince ourselves that when we do something, we can conjure up enough excuses and enough reasoning in our own heads as to why we did what we did. And it's very sad, but it's a fact of life. You seldom find somebody who is doing anything. Cheating on your spouse, stealing at work, walking into Walmart and just seeing how many times you can get away with stealing something. I mean, I've talked to all kinds of people in my lifetime, and I'm always stunned to find out they think what they're doing is justifiable somehow.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they can reason with themselves and convince themselves that what they've done isn't wrong, that they deserved to be able to do that, that they deserve to be able to treat. There was a woman on the news this morning that hurt her child really badly. And I'm looking at her picture and I'm thinking to myself, what in the hell was she thinking? How can you take a hold of a soft, sweet child, one that grabs a hold of your finger or locks their little hand in your hair and hurt them? How can you do that?
And then
I hear, they wouldn't stop crying. They wouldn't stop doing this. I'm so tired. You don't understand how tired I am. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God. You know, but it happens every day, and people can explain it away and make themselves feel like they really didn't do anything all that bad. We've talked about that a lot on the show, how a lot of times people who are
the perpetrator,
partners in some way, actually forgive each other so that their poor behavior and bad actions and everything are vindicated with each other, and that's why they stay together. You know,
wow.
I see that a lot. Couples that should never be together because they're the worst thing that ever happened to the other one. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Yep.
Yeah. So I think I want to thank everybody. We're almost out of time. I want to apologize for the vileness of our caller. And I guess I'll just have to stop. I hate, though, to miss out on somebody who really has something valid to say. And this time it looked like a sight of some kind. So go out there and have a great, great day today. We will be back tomorrow morning, bright and early, and we'll talk to you then. So God bless everybody. Thanks, Shelley.
Thanks, Reese. Good day, everybody. Have a great day.
Yep, I'll talk to you later, sweetie.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, bye-bye.